You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
I invite you to join me as we explore new ideas. I'm David Bryan. Welcome to Curiosity Invited. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Curiosity Invited. I hope it's welcome back, and if not, welcome back. Welcome for the first time. And I hope you subscribe so that you'll keep being welcomed. And today is the day after the Oscars. Probably everybody knows that. I wouldn't have known that was it not for my guest today, Monica Sandler, who is coming to us from Indianapolis. Yeah. Where she's teaching at Ball State University. Welcome, Monica. Thank you for being willing to do this at what is for me an early hour. Welcome. I know that you wrote a book, The Oscar Industry, Creative Labor, Cultural Production, and the Award System in Media Industry. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the two things I've found out about Monica, which seems fun to me, is she is both a Hollywood awards fan, Oscars included, but not just a fan. Her work in research is kind of, it sort of peels back a little bit like the Wizard of Oz, you know, pulling back the curtain to look at the machinery. Okay, you know, just a moment ago, before we just came on the air, it occurred to me that the parallel that is, at least in my mind, how can somebody be both a fan and at the same time deeply aware of the hidden machinery behind that curtain? Mm-hmm. And the parallel that the parallel in it turns out many people's lives is something I don't know if you know about it or not, but professional wrestling, right? WWE wrestling, where, uh-huh, you know, for years, there was the ongoing fight. Is it real or is it phony? And anybody who wasn't a fan was absolutely sure it was phony. And anybody who was a fan was absolutely certain that it was real. And at some point they decided themselves to pull back the curtain. And it is so obviously, and they embrace it. It is like live cartoons, right? It is like live fiction. They make up storylines, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody now knows it. And yet, right, it is both a business with all of the machinery going behind it, and at the same time, an incredible entertainment display with many really talented people. So, you know, those guys flying around, the guys and women now, flying around the ring, you know, there's a lot of peril in what they do. And yet everybody knows it's put on. But that's different. That's different in the Oscars, right? There is still the story that, in some ways, it represents the best of the best in the movie industry. And so, what is that tension between? Is it the best of the best, or is there something else going on? And is there something else going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I think the things that win Best Picture are always the best film of the year? Not necessarily, very frequently, the films that are in the running, though not this year. I was very content. We just had the ceremony, one battle after another, one Best Picture. It was up against, its main contender was Sinners, and I kept being like, I would be happy with either one of them. And One Battle ultimately won the battle. And I'm very content with that. But there are some years where I am like angry yelling at the TV because I know what's going to happen. And it's really, really irritating. because I know I don't really like the movie very much. So, and but at
But
the center of this is the award cycle and these media narratives that take hold, and like months and months of schmoozing and parties and Q&A discussions that are tons and tons of extensive work that all go into essentially creating a media narrative every year for voters. Like you're watching the film itself, but you're also thinking about what is the impact of what this film is going to mean if I vote for it? So is it going to have some sort of wider significance? And a lot of this is put on by PR media narratives, which is what got me interested in the Oscars when I was a kid. I weirdly, which is that my parents had an Entertainment Weekly subscription, and I would read awards commentary, and I was too young to have seen some of the movies, but I really liked being able to just predict, and I could study what was happening in the narratives, and that there was a big difference between what was best and what was actually winning. But I liked the process. I was really fascinated with the process. And that was what I loved about the events, is I think there was something preposterous about them. I always kind of say like award shows are camp. And I love camp. So there's this contradiction in a lot of the survey. Like there is something very like ridiculous about attempting to single out the best. You're singling out apples and oranges and comparing and contrasting, and like it is sort
Yeah.
of a ritual to do every year in some respect, but it also has a lot of impact and significance, is incredibly flawed, and for
Well,
some
wait,
reason
well, slow,
could be a much
but stop at
different world.
that. Stop at that point when you say it has significance, it has impact. It has impact on the bottom line for the film and the industry, or it has impact larger than that.
All of the above. So essentially, within the industry, this can make or break careers, particularly in the we most focus on things like the acting category and best picture, but especially the below the line categories. This can mean, creative freedom and control over what your next projects are. And this is a field where people are working as independent contractors. They're working job by job. And what is the ultimate impact of that is that it's really kind of there's a lot of instability being in the industry. So awards and recognition in, editing, cinematography, photography, sound, etc. This can be really, really impactful. There was also a new category this year, best casting. And one of the things they did at the ceremony
Best
was,
casting.
but they were talking about like what actually goes into casting. There were members of each cast that was nominated and came out and talked about like what it meant to bring together the individuals who were ultimately in the cast who made the film successful, and how caster people who were in casting play a significant role in contribution. So this is, creating a new opportunity for recognition for a group that is often, a very vital part, a very precarious part of the industry, and creating recognition and opportunity for those people.
Isn't it the is it the case that is it the case not isn't it but is it the case that everybody is an independent cut? In other words, the director, the producer, in some ways, right? They don't have a weekly salary coming in, right? And none of those people, they work by the project, right?
Yeah, they work
All of
project
those people.
to project. So some producers are employed at the studio. So a lot of people were thinking Pam and Mike. Those are people who are greenlighters and executives at Warner Brothers, and who, because Warner Brothers kind of swept at the ceremony between Sinners, One Battle After Another, and Weapons. Those were all Warner Brothers films last year. So in all cases, Warner Brothers won, though they're also just sort of losing in the world because they're up for sale and it's kind of a bit of chaos. So that's itself is its own thing. But the kind of the big impact here, I was indicating like the labor thing is an independent contractor, but then there's this also this kind of huge infrastructure for how films become profitable. And I always talk about there being this juxtaposition between the really important role they're playing in labor, particularly you have guild awards that have been going on all season. So every trade group is sort of weighing in, but it's for that recognition that will get people their next job and give them creative freedom as well. And hire, a range of team. Like when you celebrate one editor, like there is a team of them working below them in post-production, and a lot of those people, they work job to job together, and so it means getting your team on for the next project as well.
Got it. Got it.
And
That's interesting.
Yeah, so the economic factor is the kind of the additional element at play, which is that, you know, particularly for a certain type of film, movies that are released through an award season campaign, and that is, I think, particularly important and impactful, particularly with theatrical distribution going down. So you compare that between Sinners, which was financially very successful on its own, and One Battle, which was a traditional awards release. Sinners came out roughly a year ago or this time. But One Battle came out at the end of the year. It did some film festivals prior to its time to create buzz and generate interest. And over the course of the award season, it's picked up momentum. And what happens at the same time is that it's playing in theaters. Eventually, it will get onto streaming platforms. It will get, you know, kind of rentals as an option. It'll get additional options for where they can actually make the film profitable. And going through that process, the money it has made in terms of box office, in terms of other revenue streams, has occurred kind of over this period of time. It's about prolonged campaigns where more and more people are hearing about the film. And that is sort of the exhausting thing of the award season. You have to go through this excruciating months and months and months of process of promotion. But it does ensure that a certain type of film is able to be released and can be financially profitable.
What does that mean? What does that mean, a certain type of film?
So I would say if you don't have the award season process, which is sort of, you know, acclaim and prestige and naming and being singled out for that acclaim and prestige, it helps, you know, it helps ensure that smaller films in particular, or film festival films, I was kind of indicating Anora, which won Best Picture last year, was bought by Neon, its distributor, for about $10 million and ended up being significantly more profitable. So that was a low budget movie. And if it makes, when you have a low budget movie, if it makes $60, $70 million, which is for a blockbuster like bombing, but for a $10 million movie, that is hugely successful. And so you're looking at different standards necessarily, and maybe they're seen by a wider group of people, but it says that that film can be profitable and has an audience that it can be found, but it's usually going through the award season process that helps ensure that they're profitable, but they might not have a place if there wasn't this system in place.
So the promotion of the film, right, the PR to get awards, or at least to be in the running for awards, is all funded by the studios, right? Whoever's making it, yeah? And but the people who've worked on the film like that because they too will, you know, in some ways, right? A rising tide lifts all boats, and so if they make the tide rise, well, they get the money. But other groups, other pieces of the filmmaking process, also potentially reap rewards from that, not financial, except, you know, for the next job, right? They get more play.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay.
I mean, I think that's certainly true. I think that it can be debatable if it's a everybody wins type of situation. Certainly, one thing that I really focus on from the labor standpoint, because I'm looking at it from a historical standpoint, is, you know, some of the awards start during a period prior to unionization, and there is this sort of mindset of splitting the labor force. It's happening on a lot of fronts. You also see this particularly with Stardom, where rather than film is a collective medium where there are hundreds people working on any given production, and yet you're singling out individuals, and what does that ultimately mean in the medium? So when the Oscars are first started, that essentially it was about driving people towards, you know, what can individual success look like for me, rather than thinking about the collective impact. So there is this, it's seen in the independent contractor model, but that was not always the case in the industry. Hollywood, most during the studio era, most people were employees at specific studios. After the Paramount decision in 1948, there was a period of mass firing because the industry kind of went into complete chaos. That was when they had to sever between theatrical chains and movie studios because they were deemed to be vertically integrated by the Supreme Court. Everyone shifts from being an employee to an independent contractor. And that's also when you see the Writers Guild Awards, the Directors Guild Awards, the American Cinema Editors Eddie Awards, you name them, start in the late 1940s or early 1950s. So there is this corresponding process. There's a quote, which I've roughly memorized, from Louis B. Mayer, who's one of the originators or one of the founding fathers of the Academy, where he says, "I found the best way to handle my employees was to hang medals all over them. If I gave them medals and trophies, they'd kill themselves to produce what I wanted." And then he doubles down and says, that's why the Academy Award was created. And I think that's an important factor to be kept in mind. And ultimately, you have that in place with the labor, and he's the one financially profiting off of it as a producer and executive.
Right.
So
right, exactly.
A contradiction, certainly.
You know, you just said something a moment ago where you said, well, the Oscars sort of started then. But was it always like it is now? I mean, honestly, I haven't watched the Oscars or any of them in years, but the format, I find the format, you know, it becomes like fundraisers for all sorts of entities. They, in the early days, they're sort of searching for a form, and then they land on something, and then they do that again and again and again. So it's always, in some ways, it's always the same show. It's just different acts in the same show. And has the Oscars always been, you know, a stage, a bunch of people sitting in an audience and people coming up and accepting it, or were there other forms that took place?
Well, so the answer is no. There's been an evolution. So the first Academy Awards and the first, like, 15 or so years of the event, the event took place in the form of a banquet. So it was a dinner banquet, essentially like a party that was taking place. And it was really about the insiders in the room. There was a lot of press that was still attending. The first ceremony is really small, and they have to kind of nag people into going. So it was held within the context of the second annual banquet for the Academy. People who were not Academy members were like, I knew in advance, well in advance, that they had won an award. Didn't really care. But there's a process that changes that pretty quickly. But it's a dinner party. Within a couple of years, more and more people do get interested in the event and actually attending. And it becomes essentially one of the biggest parties that are in the industry, because you're just throwing the most celebrities in a room in a given year. So it naturally attracts attention. There's press at the events where you get gossip column of who was talking to who and sitting next to who and whispering or dancing with who and all of that stuff. Or things like Joan Fontaine and Olivia de Havilland, who are sisters. There was always this like press discussion that there was a rivalry between them, being like, Joan Fontaine just won her Oscar and Olivia de Havilland like rolled her eyes or something, or was spotted that way. So like perpetuating idle gossip and things like that became a really important part of the ceremony. It was like a gold mine for that, because they're all in a room together. But it was still a party. Generally speaking, it was a party. 1944 is the first full radio broadcast of the event, though, where it was still a dinner banquet, but a bunch of people came up and gave really long-winded speeches that were recorded. It was described as essentially described as excruciating by a lot of the press. They do a full radio broadcast in 1944, and they're no longer preaching to the public about why film is an art form and why it's supposed to be important. And instead, you have sort of Jack Benny is the host, and it's much more of an entertainment format where, you know, essentially like they're trying to have performances, they're trying to make jokes. And it also moves from being at places like the Copacabana and the Roosevelt Hotel and the Millennium Biltmore in Los Angeles, which are, you know, banquet rooms or party halls or dance clubs and things like that, to being at the Pantages Theater, which, of course, an auditorium setting, which can be better wired for sound and recording. So it shifts the entire environment of that. And there's, you know, after parties that people go to, but the party itself originally was what the Oscars were. At that point, so that way people could, you know, drink and dance, because there were drinking and dancing options at the early Oscars.
Were there any surprises? Well, Were there any controversies? I remember when I was a kid, several controversies, and some of them were like, you know, I think we spoke about it last time, was the woman who turns out not to have been a Native American, accepting the award from Marlon Brando and giving a speech about things Native American and abuses, et cetera. And, but there were also, as I recall, there were controversies about people were incredibly upset about who won, right? I mean, I remember, I think it was Saving Private Ryan and Shakespeare in Love were up for the Best Picture Award, and Private Ryan lost, didn't win, and Shakespeare in Love won, and people were just like beside themselves. So there were things like that. Well, I mean, if you have stories about that, great. But were there things last night? I'm assuming you watched, but were there things last night that rose to the level of controversial?
I wouldn't say they spread the love mostly between two films, but I don't think it was a surprisingly uncontroversial ceremony, just in terms of, like, you know, you think about acceptance speeches where people are speaking out during the event. That wasn't necessarily something that we saw on a regular basis there. And there was a moment where Javier Bardem commented on Free Palestine and No Wars before he was giving out an award at the event. And Conan O'Brien spoke at the beginning of the event just a little bit about, you know, the global conflicts going on and whether or not, you know, what the impact is of an award ceremony in that. I actually wrote down the quote because I thought it was so interesting and compelling. So I can walk through what he said. But he said, "Everyone watching tonight around the world are all too aware that these are very chaotic, frightening times. It's at moments like these that I believe the Oscars are particularly resonant." And he particularly talks about the show being broadcast in 31 countries and there being nominees from all over the world, from across 9 different continents were being represented in the evening. And he also notes, like, "We pay tribute tonight not just to the film, but to the ideals of global artistry, collaboration, patience, resiliency, and the rarest qualities today, optimism." And then his ending point in there is, "So let us please celebrate not because we think all is well, but because we work and hope for better," which I think was a really nice way of commenting on what the impact, because as I said, words can seem kind of silly, but there is a unity that's come about the event coming together. And, you know, there was a really good range of kind of global cinemas winning at the event across the board, as in documentary, international film, obviously, things like K-pop Demon Hunters, beyond that. And the awards themselves have become much more global. But that being a central facet that he opened and commented on at the beginning of the show.
That sounds lovely, actually.
And that's the controversial winners, at least, or not just the controversial moments at the ceremony. You mentioned Sash Dean Littlefeather, but of course, people speaking out and using their platform. And then there's always the debate over whether or not it's appropriate to use that platform. Because in some ways, it can come across as rather tone deaf. In other ways, you know, I think there can be moments that are really impactful and remembered, is that you have the ability to use the open floor, and are you going to use it to speak in that moment? And a number of times that has been greeted with boos. Other times it has been, you know, really a moment that people have spoken out. So one thinks of, kind of on a positive level, something like Halle Berry's speech. Michael B. Jordan's speech last night was extraordinary as well. But her speech, where she spoke about opening doors for women of color in that moment, because she was the first African American and woman of color to win Best Actress when she won.
Well, and is there still, you know, I really don't follow it, I think it even got a nickname, right? And there was the controversy over the very whiteness of the Oscars and all of the awards, right? Oscars so white. And is that still vital? Mm-hmm. Is that still important? Does it get mentioned? I mean, I get Michael B. Jordan won, but Right. I mean, it's so. Mm-hmm. Tell me.
Yes, Oscar So White, this is the decade mark of that. So the first year was 2015, and then there was a follow-up year, 2 years in a row, where there were no people of color nominated in any of the acting categories. It started as a social media campaign of sort of recognizing what was happening. But after 2 years of controversy, the Academy announced that they were going to increase the numbers, like diversity numbers, in their membership pool, which at that time, the Academy was 90% white. It's about 75%, and the average age was about 65. So that gives you like a little bit of context of what they were working at that moment, but also announcing that they're going to double the diversity of their membership by 2020, which they did accomplish, means going 80-20. So that's a kind of, but they definitely expanded, but they didn't do that necessarily by increasing their diversity, by drastically transforming opportunity for people of color and for women in Hollywood, but rather by becoming a more international organization. So there are definitely contradictions, but I think one of the things that Oscar So White did very effectively was it called attention to the problems with diversity in Hollywood itself, even if the Academy, like the Academy is... In some ways, they're an honorary organization. They mostly give out trophies, and they have a museum, and they have incredible archival records, which in some cases, I will say, the Academy Archive is unmatched to people like me, which, you know, to historians who want to look at archival materials related to the industry, like, they do their collections are unmatched. They're absolutely incredible. So within that context, like, what impact do they have on Hollywood? They have an incredible impact on scholars. We love them. Right. So that is the kind of central thing, is they don't have the ability to transform Hollywood, but calling attention, and this is one thing I always kind of say, is that they can be kind of a mirror of the industry of what's going on and showcasing it really as it is, and a space that allows people to call them out, that they expose those realities. They also can be a shield in that when you have moments of triumph, it can kind of, you look over there and it feels like something monumental has happened, but it actually isn't necessarily reflective of something that's really systemic when you have moments of recognition. So I mentioned Halle Berry before, but she later said that she didn't feel like it did open any doors because it had been, you know, it's several decades since she had won. Michelle Yeoh became the second woman of color to win the category a couple of years ago. So there is this kind of often existing element at play where, like, what does the symbolic recognition actually do, and how do you systemically change the industry? But I think having a forum that really can draw attention to that is significant, and there has been changes that have happened. Even if the Academy's changes were addressing a different issue and they went more international, which was not the problem they were being called out on a decade ago.
But do you think the categories that the profile has changed because of the awards, or because of the awards industry, or is it because the culture has changed? The larger culture has changed.
I mean, I think what has been showcased at the awards the past decade is the biggest trend has been a rise in more international cinema at the event. Mm-hmm. So prior to this time, Parasite won in 2020, which was a huge deal. I did not think it was going to happen. I was totally shocked because it was completely unheard of for a foreign language film to win Best Picture at one time at the Academy. I mean, that just very simply put, like, the Best Foreign Language category, which is now Best International Film, which, so they've redesigned it, kind of relegated most global cinema to... Right. That category, and you'd occasionally see something get nominated in Best Picture, but it was a real rarity. And so now you're seeing kind of the past couple of years, there have been two international films or foreign language films that have been nominated in Best Picture. We've seen Parasite win Best Picture. And so there has been this expansion that I think is really significant. And that's really where the adjustments have occurred. I think that itself is something that's like, what is the best film of the year? Oftentimes it wasn't made in the United States. And for a really long time, it wasn't really represented or even talked about at the Oscars. And the foreign language international film category is a very weird contest of nations where every country has representatives. Usually it's from the kind of the national equivalent of the academy that we have here. So there's like the French Academy.
You mean it gets submitted by that organization?
Yeah, they submit eight and they get one film. So if you have a country that makes multiple amazing films that year, you get one.
You're screwed.
And that is the representative. You do not have multiple films from that country that get nominated in that category. You get one.
And what's the story? What's your story for why that's true?
For in what sense?
Why it's true that the doors have not been flung open. The doors have been opened in this very sort of modest way.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the fact that they expanded the membership overseas, so you have more.
No, but why not open? Why not? Why did they not kick the doors open rather than?
Because I think they're a very archaic in some ways organization. They're an honorary membership body. They only invite a selection of people in every year. They've expanded the numbers of people who are voting, certainly because of that, but it is a slow and menial process in a certain way. And they're definitely kind of clouded in a lot of, I wouldn't say bureaucracy, but also just like policies of a board of governors that can be really tedious, all of that stuff.
Well, do you think I would be wildly off base if I said my hunch for why they wouldn't kick the doors open is that the intent we talked about, you know, or at least I use the phrase, right? You're not just looking at the Oscars as an entertainment event, but sort of to peek at the machinery behind the curtain. And that machinery has a goal, and that goal is profit for the studios that exist here in the United States of America. And if we make it too, if they make it too democratic, the danger is that it will take on a flavor that more and more Americans don't particularly want, and so it becomes less popular, and so it becomes, and it's less money for the bottom lines of the studios here. That would be my guess. But
so in the contemporary sense, I don't know. The main thing is that the Academy and has the Academy infrastructure as an organization, and then they have their members who mostly don't actually do anything other than like get award screeners and vote. Like, what is your day-to-day life if you're an Academy member? You do not think about being an Academy member. You know that it's a very
ever.
Nice thing that you were invited to doing. And
you got a bunch of DVDs to watch.
Yeah. They have a streaming platform that they can log into and watch movies on, and they vote for Oscars. But if they're like into it, they go to events that are held for Academy members where people who are interested in awards do Q&As, and it's very interesting and you get to hear more about films. Like, but your day-to-day life for the average Academy member, which there are thousands of people kind of globally that have been invited, is completely not interacted with it. So to like determine why this very large collective of people, but also the only a fraction of people in the industry, it should be said simultaneously, do the things that they do kind of conspiratorially, is like, I'd say that the will of the collective is rather broad form. However, when we look at this historically, there's definitely a lot of validity to how the studios interact with the Academy. And there's also just a process of how the Academy becomes an independent organization that I think really is telling. And that is, we can see it particularly in the 1940s, but also with how the Academy was originally funded and how it transformed, which is actually one of my favorite stories, which I'm going to tell you about. Okay, so the Academy, when it's founded, is funded by the Association of Motion Picture Producers, AMPP. They are basically a collective of like the executives. They're the organizing body that negotiates against the like Screen Actors Guild on behalf of producers and executives and representatives from the studio. So when the Screen Actors Guild, who are currently up for their contract, the Writers Guild is starting negotiations on their next contract, the Directors Guild will be up soon too. They're negotiating with the AMPTP.
But
sort of like the representative organization. But so basically funds are coming from the studios to fund the Academy. And this is kind of, but the Academy is an independent organization at the same time, but they're financially beholden. And there's this entire process of the Academy trying to become a more independent organization, particularly in the post-World War II period. And this was during the presidency of actor Gene Herschelt. And this becomes really tied to a growth in international films that start to break into the ceremony. And it really annoys executives that this starts to happen because members are voting, particularly 1946. So right after World War II is one of the like biggest years that represented international films, at least at that point in history, where you have an opening with films like Rome, really classic war films like Rome, Open City, Children of Paradise, that are being distributed in the United States for the first time because they were, you know, made during the blockade and were not accessible. British films in particular also becoming very, very prominent during that period of time and distributing in the United States for the first time in the post-war period. So you have this influx of international films that actually get nominations because they didn't have the international film category at that point in time, but get real nominations. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit of like shock amongst producers because these are films that are getting nominated that aren't made by one of the big five or little studios of the studio era. And like that is like a huge backlash. And Gene Herschelt in particular, who's president, is basically like, make better films is his reaction. Not like we're going to buckle to you. And that's when the Academy starts kind of trying to find its first partnerships to find outside funding. The radio broadcast starting in 1944. They don't originally have an advertiser, but they eventually shift to trying to find someone who can be a promoter. They actually do their own radio show where they have a sponsor, which again is designed to help them find self-funding so they don't have to be beholden to producers and executives. So they have the Academy Award radio broadcast. And so there's this tension that is existing at this point in time. And that really hits a culmination point in 1949, which is the year Hamlet wins Best Picture, which is the first non-American film to win Best Picture, which was hugely controversial, surprisingly. And so in the aftermath of that, the producers basically announced, we're not going to fund you as an organization anymore. There's a quote that like when that was announced that it looked like sour grapes, I think one news outlet reported. But basically, there's the statement that, like, we're not going to fund you as an organization because you're no longer working as a tool for us. We thought this was an agreement that,
and notably,
the membership are voting for those films. You know, just simply put, like, they have members. They're from varying different branches of the studio workforce. But you have this voting body that is perfectly fine with voting for non-Hollywood movies seen in that moment. So they withdraw their funds in 1949. And there's just basically this battle that breaks out for this period of time where the Academy, they move to they have their own theater, but just significantly smaller for a period. They do still have the radio broadcast, but it's not funding the way that it should. They briefly do a partnership with Bulova Watches and produce an Academy Award watch that's on brand. But basically all of this, every year they go to the executives and go, we can't afford to put on the event. Do not want the event to occur. Like, you're going to lose the promotion of it. Your movies are promoted through this route. And every year they say they basically get bailed out, like roughly the last minute, get enough funding to like, okay, we need to keep this alive. Until 1953, which is when the first television broadcast occurs. And at the beginning of 1953, in January, that was not a thing that was going to happen. So basically, producers finally said, no, we're not paying for you. And notably, producers have been very opposed to the Academy going to television because there was a view that, you know, television is a competitor. They worked with NBC, which had the first broadcast, and like it made a lot of money, but that was how the Academy became financially independent, was through the television broadcast. It's the only thing that's been stable for them. So as ratings have declined in the modern day, it has really put the Academy into a lot of chaos because it funds 95% of their operations in a given year.
So what you're talking about is not a conspiracy. You're talking about a structural situation. That's what I was sort of trying to point at, but
yeah.
Right, it's not
to see today, I would say. And that's what I get into in my research, is where you can see when you're looking at that history how key moments help to define that structure. In some ways, we're living with it in the aftermath now.
Right. Okay, I'm looking at the time and we're going to come to close, but there's tons more to say, especially from somebody who knows what they're talking about. What do you want people to know about this?
About the ceremony?
About this whole Oscar industry, about the industry behind all of that.
You know, what we're living with is a kind of media zoo circus every year, but that it's the byproduct of, you know, 98 years of history that has really built this infrastructure. And if it doesn't make sense why it is a system, why it is that we focus on this, is part of this kind of collective history that is involved in Hollywood. And that's what I'm doing in my research, is walking through and exposing how those structures were ultimately built. They have really real world impact, even though there's something, you know, silly about it all together. And that's why I've always loved the awards, is because I've been so fascinated with this contradiction. And I'm, you know, highly critical of them. And I think they're preposterous. And yet I'm still fascinated with them. And I have been since I was very young.
I'm telling you, it's WWE. It's spectacular entertainment and totally crafted.
I've always heard some of it as the annual award season is kind of like a political campaign, but there's no consequences if the film you don't like wins. So that's you get true. All of the strategy and competitiveness without anything actually mattering.
Exactly. There are no executive orders to be coming down that'll affect all of us. But but it is fun to be frustrated that what Saving Private Ryan didn't.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Monica Sandler, thank you so much. And the Oscar industry, creative labor, cultural production, and the award system and media industry. Is it available for people to purchase somewhere?
It is coming out at the 100th. So the manuscript is a work in progress at the current moment. But fabulous. You can find me on social media or read my writing on the awards. Follow me on social media at Monica_Roxanne on Instagram and Monica_Roxanne1 on Twitter.
If you send me all those things, I will make sure they're in the liner notes. They're,
excellent.
I guess they're not called liner notes, but whatever. So, Monica Sandler, thanks so much for being here and have a good day teaching.
Yes, thank you.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.